Michael Lombardi, always seen on NFL Network and Showtime's Inside the NFL. The Mully and Hanley NFL Insider. Twitter.com/Michael Lombardi.
Hot.
Michael Lombardi with Mully and Hanley on 670 The Score.
Mully and Hanley, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Let's get out to the Home Run In Hotline. Home Run In Pizza, try one on your grill at the next tailgate you're at. And there we find Michael Lombardi, he of the NFL Network, and of course Showtime's Inside the NFL. How are you doing this morning, Michael?
I am doing great, thank you. How are you guys?
We're doing fine, and the Bears are on the bye, and we're talking about how teams get better on the bye. And has life changed in the NFL with the one padded practice allowed per week? You can't really do the get back to training camp thing that you'd like to do, go back to basics. How does it affect teams in their bye week?
I think, you know, we saw this. Teams are 3-9 coming off the bye, which is not typical. I mean, typically you like to work on some of the areas where, like for the Bears, for example, you know, obviously they've had trouble tackling from the safety position. They've had trouble giving up big runs. I mean, you like to work on those areas in your time. But, you know, to me the biggest concern is you give players four consecutive days off. And as we know, players with four consecutive days off, it's never really good during the season. You know, weight, the heavy guys gain more weight. You know, guys lose reality of the situation. So I think it's really kind of tough. And I think the further out in the season your bye is, the better off it'll be for you, because at least you'll have more time to stay within the fundamentals and techniques of the game without losing it right away.
Michael, one of the good games, at least entertaining games, should be the Eagles and the Cowboys this week. And these two teams like to talk to each other and through the media anyway. Rob Ryan said this was going to be the all hype team, and so far I think that, you know, the record is probably closer to what he said versus the dream team. But you do have guys that are upset there. You have Samuel upset. He was on record saying, "Well, I guess they don't want me." When guys are unhappy and think that the team doesn't want them, we see it here a little bit with Chris Harris. How does that impact their play and maybe the team itself?
Well, I don't know if it really does. I mean, sometimes it's more of a media thing than it really is internally in the locker room. I mean, you know, Asante Samuel, I mean, all of a sudden now we are in week 8 of the season, and, you know, they signed Nnamdi Asamoah during the preseason. So, I mean, it's really kind of, and he has been a starter. It isn't like he's not playing, so I don't understand. And they're paying his contract. You know, I mean, obviously when they signed Nnamdi, they had mentioned that they would only trade a Samuel if they got something significantly back for him. So, I think it's a lot about nothing, and I think really you learn in this business for as long as I've been in it. You just kind of ignore some things, and you just move on. I think the concerning thing more is when players are unhappy about their contract. We see it with Peyton Hillis in Cleveland, how disruptive that can be around him. We see, you know, Matt Forte's doing an incredible job playing well, but we know obviously he knows he needs to get paid.
You know, it's interesting because what Asante Samuel said wasn't just that he was unhappy. He basically said that the guys upstairs are playing fantasy football. He questioned, effectively, he undermined the front office. He basically, and I don't know how Roseman and Joe Banner respond to that, but he called them out. There's no shadow of a doubt. He said that they didn't play the game, and he said some nasty stuff. We've seen the same thing in Chicago. Chris Harris, Lance Briggs, you mentioned Forte. Now, you know, they've all at different points said something to the effect that the front office doesn't want them, and what is the front office doing? It seems like it's almost a new trend. You know, players aren't upset with their coaches, and Asante Samuel says Andy Reid's his guy, and they've cleared the air, and he plays for Andy every week. But it apparently isn't the coaches; it's the front office. Now you got an issue with your front office.
Well, you know, and that's always been kind of when you don't want to get mad at the coach because he coaches you, so you might as well take it out on somebody else. And I think in Philadelphia, you know, part of the problem what they've done in Philly is you know, when you sign so many new players without an off season to really kind of blend everything, you end up with a team of individuals, not a team. And so, and I think it's really creates a problem. And I think at times in Philly, you see them play that way; they play like they're strangers and they're not really cohesive in what they're doing. So it does become a factor. And I think that's one of the things you have to guard against in free agency. You can't build your team through free agency. You've got to grow your team in the locker room, through the draft, through other sources, but you can't just, you know, bring in pieces and think you're going to win automatically, and I think Philadelphia is finding that out.
Is the Peyton Hill situation a cautionary tale for both the Bears front office and Forte? Because not only did he not get a deal done and his production's been down, he's also battled injury, and when you're investing big-time money in a running back whose career is even shorter than the normal career in the NFL, do you worry about how much money you invest in that position?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm always concerned about running backs because I think, you know, not that they're not great. They tend to be a dime a dozen. But I think in this case with Matt Forte, and he's changed my mind. I mean, he looks much faster to me watching him play this year than he did last year. And he looks more explosive this year. And I think he's so much a part of what they do offensively. And he'll become even a bigger part as the weather changes in Chicago. And you've got to have a power back. And you've got to be able to throw the ball in certain areas of the field to control the middle of the field. So, you know, I think he's a really unique situation for me because I think he's really good and I think he deserves to get paid. But I also think that, you know, sometimes you can't always just overpay your running backs. I think, look, Tennessee paid Chris Johnson. He deserved to get paid. Are they happy with that contract? Probably not right now. And so I think ultimately we see in Minnesota, Adrian Peterson makes a huge amount of money, but we know the running game doesn't make a difference in scoring points. We know you've got to score explosive plays through the passing game to score, and I think that's where Matt Forte has an edge over some of these other guys because he does make productive plays in the passing game.
The Bears' offense has gotten better, and they've done so by kind of skimming things down a little bit. They're getting rid of the ball faster. They're not doing the drops. I just wonder, as you look at that, and again, we hear this all the time, that you need two blues at tackle if you really want to do seven-step drops on a consistent basis. They obviously don't have that. They don't have near that. Does that offense still work? Is there anybody in the league that can do the things that Martz wants to do? Or has that just been abandoned, and is the offensive line improved just because they're not trying to do things they can't do?
You know, I think obviously you've got to know what you can do and what you can't do with your team. And if you have protection, like New England has protection, you can get away with doing a little bit more. But I think you have to solve your problems based on the personnel you have. And this offensive line is a problem for the Bears. So, and I think what Mike's trying to do is be able to have an offense that when teams take away what he does best, is to be able to go to something else. And so you can't lose sight of what you need to do in terms of how to beat the good teams. You know, you can beat some teams playing a certain style, but you're going to have to eventually beat the good teams playing left-handed. And I think that's really what you need to do. But you have to have smart. You can't go like Jim Caldwell did and go into New Orleans and run no huddle when you're dealing with the New Orleans crowd noise with Curtis Painter at quarterback. That, to me, isn't sound thinking. I think you got to come up with a better plan. I think what Chicago's done the last 2 weeks kind of fits their personality much better than what they would like to do with Mike Martz's offense.
Michael, with the Bears off this week, I'm a lot of Bears fans will be watching the division. And Detroit going to Denver now with Matt Stafford banged up, maybe he doesn't play. A two-game losing streak, all of a sudden the darlings of the NFL have a little adversity here, and they've had some distractions in Ndamukong Suh being called out last week, the Schwartz and Harbaugh stuff the week before. Are they on a little slippery slope with a young team where the distractions might get in their way, not only with the injury?
Well, I think, you know, Schwartz does a great job. He's a mature coach. He's a young coach, but he's a mature coach. He's been around Jeff Fisher, Bill Belichick, so he understands there's going to be bumps in the road during the season. And I think when you watch Bears, when you watch the Lions, and I think it's really clear that they've really not executed on third down. Matt Stafford has gotten hit a little bit too much. He hasn't been sacked as much the last couple weeks he has, but he's gotten hit too much, and he's thrown off his back foot. He's not accurate, and he hasn't played well, especially on third down in the last 2 weeks, and I think that's been a concern. They need to get to more under center formations. What happens to you when you get good at something like spread and it becomes easy for you to throw an option around on third and five, or it's easy to throw it up to Calvin Johnson, it tends to take away from what you need to do to win the tough games. And the Lions need to play under center a little more, give Matthew Stafford some easy throws, put a little bit more deception into their offense. It's hard to run the spread in shotgun like Peyton Manning does if Peyton Manning isn't running all the plays at the line of scrimmage. There's really only one Peyton Manning doing that. We saw Tom Brady do it against Buffalo. Too much shotgun, not enough under center. The next week they go out to Oakland. Brady's under center for 60% of the time. They run the ball a little bit more effectively. They still make explosive plays in the passing game, and they win and control the clock. So I think there's got to be a little bit more balance. And the Lions kind of fell privy to, you know, we're having so much success throwing this thing out of shotgun. Let's keep staying in shotgun. I think they need to take a step back and kind of get back to their base offense.
What was your whole take on that business with Ndamukong Suh and Cliff Avril and this idea that you know, you're taunting the quarterback, Matt Ryan gets knocked down and they're calling for the cart, whatever. And then when he's asked about it later, he says basically it's karma that Atlanta tries to hurt people and that they come down the field and try to take guys out. What was your take on that whole thing? Was that just a lot of talk, or is there some sort of gentlemanly conduct expected?
I think anything that goes on between those 3 hours during the game verbally should be ignored once the game's over. It's the heat of battle and competition, whether it's Jay Cutler saying something to Mike Martz or whether it's happening on the field. I think there's a standard rule that whatever happens on that field on Sunday verbally should just stay there because it's in the heat of battle of competition. And I also think that you should never talk to an owner after for 24 hours after a game. I think that should be a rule imposed because there's things that are said there that aren't very comfortable either. So, you know, those two things, if I were the commissioner, I would put in play because really, you know, it's the heat of battle. You know, and we were talking about it at Showtime yesterday on Inside the NFL with Sims and Sapp and Collinsworth, and it's like, what has the league become now? I know we're not allowed to hit receivers coming over the middle, but now we're worried about the verbiage that's on the field. I mean, you ask any one of those guys, Collinsworth, Sapp, Sims, some of the conversations they had. Sims was talking about Reggie White, what he would say to him during the game. As the Minister of Defense and a minister himself, it wasn't very kind. So I think you just have to kind of ignore it.
Well, Sapp would get into it with Mike Sherman. They'd be standing there screaming at each other while the game was ongoing.
See, but here we have players go right to their Twitter account after the game and start tweeting what they were saying.
Yeah. It's like running home to mommy. Can you believe he called me that? You know, it's like we just play the game. Just keep playing the game. And whatever somebody says to you, he's just trying to get in your head. I mean, it's like a golfer who tries to get in his competitor's head and gets away with it. So just move on to it. And I think it's a lot about nothing. And I think as a coach, you've got to make sure everybody understands that. Because if you get in your head, if you start talking about it, you're not concentrating on what you have to do next.
What are they going to do for a quarterback down in Arizona?
Well, look, I've been probably – I was so bad against Kevin Cobb that there were certain people in the league that telling me I should keep quiet because it might affect their trade status with them. And I never was a Kevin Cobb fan. I never saw Kevin Cobb the way he was being portrayed in Philly and obviously the way Arizona saw him. He's really concerned in the pocket. He can't stay there. He can't make decisions quickly on the move. But these are all the things he couldn't do in Philadelphia that were on the tape if you watched it closely. And I think that's why Philadelphia traded him. They had high hopes for him to be the leader of the franchise, but when you know they realized fairly quickly that he couldn't put it all together. I think this is a huge mistake for Arizona. They signed Larry Fitzgerald to a huge contract. They pay him a lot of money, and now they still don't have a quarterback. Where are they going to get one? These are the kind of decisions that usually cost you your job.
And Rogers Cromartie part of that deal, and they don't have any secondary, for God's sake. They can't defend the pass at all.
They can't defend the run. I mean, this defense here can't even get lined up. I mean, you know, they really need to count to five Mississippi before they can start playing because they never get lined up. I mean, I've never seen a team get beat more because they're out of position on tape all season long. It's remarkable. I mean, it's like, did you guys practice this week? Are we doing anything? I mean, Pittsburgh comes out in a standard formation, and it's like they look like it's Greek. They've never seen it.
Molly was talking about this earlier in the show. The bye week used to be able to get a lot of stuff done, self-evaluate, maybe a little mini camp, a mini training camp. But now with the new CBA, you limit what you can do. How much does that impact teams?
I think it does. I mean, this CBA thing, this lack of practice, you can see it on tape. The pad level in some teams is too high. You can see that there's not enough contact. You can see, look, football, the art of football, the fundamentals of football is so much like the golf swing. You've got to do it every day. It's got to become second nature. And when pressure comes into play, you have had to practice it so much that the pressure doesn't affect how you work. And when you limit the amount of time you can work, you limit the amount of time you can handle the pressure situations and execute. And I think it really is effective. And I think you have to cut down your packages. I think what Arizona's trying to do, for example, is run too much stuff and not get good at what they actually can do and not have a base or a foundation that they can rely on. And I think ultimately these new rules certainly benefit the players. They don't benefit the coaches. It's really going to be difficult. Like Pittsburgh today, they're going to go to full pads because they know they're playing New England. And if they don't have a good pad of practice today, they're not going to be ready on Sunday. Why are they doing it on Thursday? So they can stay as close to their fundamentals as they can to game day. They're not worried about getting anybody hurt. They're worried about making sure they can play with pad level, making sure they can play with fundamentals, because that's what it's going to require to beat a good New England team.
Would that become a trend, Thursday practice and pads?
I think most good teams are doing it. I think it has to be done because you only get 14 of them, so there's going to be 2 weeks where you can't do it. But you got to find a way, like Bill Walsh was able to do, find a way to practice without pads with a tempo and and really coach fundamentals and techniques to be able to do that, because the game is going to start slipping. We think tackling's bad in Chicago. Tackling's bad all over the National Football League. That's why there's so many big runs this year. You want to see bad angles? Just put the DeMarco Murray 91-yard touchdown run.
Yeah.
You know, Chicago's seen bad angles from their safeties this year. The Rams will up that one. I can promise you that. Those angles were horrendous in a seven-man front. Those guys didn't really understand how to fit there. DeMarco Murray's a fascinating one because Tony Dorsett and Emmitt Smith, both first-time ballot Hall of Famers, never had 250 yards.
Yeah.
DeMarco Murray comes in and does it.
Unbelievable. Michael, thanks a ton.
You're
we appreciate
it. Thanks.